The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericaempowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to the Tantric Lounge with noted expert on sex, love, and intimacy, Jacqueline Hillier. In our program, we'll discuss not only the nature of sex and the spirituality of sex, but also the science of sex. Now, here is one of Australia's leading experts on sex and love, Jacqueline Hillier.
Hello, and welcome to yet another episode of the Tantric Lounge. And I'm here, as usual, with my co-host, Xavier Waterkane. Hello, Xavier.
Hello, Jacqueline.
And we have a fascinating guest who I shall introduce shortly, because today we're going to be talking about the future of sex.
Yes, we'll be gazing into the crystal balls of sexuality.
Yes.
And seeing what we can see.
Yes, and there's this whole list of things that I really can barely even understand. I'm quite curious to find out what teledildo donics might be. I have a vision in my head, which is
Don't we all?
Yes, and quasi-holographics, and what on earth has that got to do with sex and so forth? And, you know, as someone who's really interested in the spiritual side and the connection and all that, I'm very curious to see how all of this techno stuff might fit in with the whole kind of spiritual side of sex as well. So I think it's going to be quite an interesting show.
But before we launch into that, we'll go through the usual ritual.
Yes.
What is the latest on Planet Jacqueline?
Well, I just want to do a follow-up from last week when we had that really interesting conversation with Cindy Darnell and how she was looking, apart from doing fabulous work in general, she has this project to get the Atlas of Erotic Anatomy and Arousal crowdfunded. And if you recall, she was only halfway through the crowdfunding.
Yes, she
had
stagnated.
And it had really stalled. It was completely stagnated. She had less than a week to go to raise nearly $8,000. And she did it within 2 days of being on the show.
Well, just goes to show that radio works.
And so I would like, on Cindy's behalf, to thank all those listeners who clearly went and contributed to her fabulous project. So we'll keep everyone informed of how that's going, since it's kind of been part now of the Tantric Lounge.
Yes, the Atlas of the Anatomy of Sex. A worthwhile project if there ever was one.
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to be using it all the time, which is why I made a nice contribution as well. But, you know, listeners, it got Xavier and I thinking, didn't it?
Yes, it got us thinking.
It got us thinking.
Thoughts began to happen.
They did.
Tick, 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 tick.
As you would expect from a brain coach and a thinking person sex coach. But what we don't normally think about money so much, it's not our strong point. But we kind of thought, wow, if all of our listeners like to support such wonderful causes, then perhaps they might like to support this radio show.
Yes, of course, to keep us independent and keep us ad-free. Much as we loved our sponsors with last season, we just became aware that it is really nice also
to be free and independent.
To be free and independent.
Yes.
That doesn't necessarily mean, of course, that if a sponsor were to come along, we wouldn't actually appreciate their contribution very much as well.
Absolutely.
But it has to be very much aligned with our...
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Anyway, so
but since listeners are already pre-aligned, we don't have a problem accepting little bits and pieces, however generous you would want to be, hint, hint.
Yes. Like if all of the listeners contributed just a few dollars, we would actually cover our costs for this show, because this show is actually quite expensive to run.
Yes, as most media are, even in the modern age.
Yes. So this episode I'm self-funding, but I would really love it if we all chipped in a little bit.
Yes. So that's just dropping a heavy hint. There will be mechanisms, which we will describe later, for doing that, just planting the seed.
Yeah. Well, because as I've mentioned before, I'm revamping my website, and hopefully, if everything is aligning, these things always take longer than you expect, my new website, or my revamped website, it's not completely new, will be up next week, and we might well have a little donation button available for people if they want to contribute a dollar or two.
Or three or four or five or 10 or 20. Anyway, whatever it is, let's just plant that seed now so that people can think about it.
Mm. There's another little seed I want to plant because I'm involved in quite an exciting media project here in Australia that's sponsored by Durex Australia called the 30 Nights of Nookie. And it's just starting to launch. It's going – so what it is they asked me to be their sex expert and to devise a 30 Nights of Nookie program.
Nookie being?
Being a word for sex, love and intimacy.
Yes.
Yes.
Because not all of our American listeners might know the word nookie.
Is nookie not an American word?
No, it's very British.
Is it really?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, just to educate all the American and non-British or Australian listeners, nookie, nookie, nookie is just a nice kind of word.
I don't know whether the Canadians know nookie.
Oh, okay.
But I know the New Zealanders and the UK certainly don't have a problem.
Okay, well, let's make nookie an international word. That means mucking around in the realms of sex, love and intimacy.
Yes.
Yes. So what...
Playing with the bits.
Well, no, but not necessarily.
Ah,
and one
okay.
of the reasons why we used nookie was we didn't want people to think that this was just about genitals and intercourse.
Okay.
And in fact, there are
I didn't mention genitals or intercourse. I just said bits. Well, anyway, 30 Nights of Nookie is about what?
It's about getting couples to sign up and every evening they get a new activity to do.
Ah.
Mm. And I think it's going to be rather lovely. So we're certainly encouraging lots of people to sign up to get access to this program and see what it's like to commit to having some quality nookie every single night. Mm. So that's quite exciting. So that's just they've just launched like the pre stuff.
Who is they?
Well, Durex, I guess, and
yep.
all of their many, many PR and communications people.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike me, who does it all on my own, there's got this great swathe of people involved in all of this sort of stuff. My God, the stuff I could do if I had that many people behind me.
Yes.
Insane.
The swathes.
Yes. If I was a big multinational corporation, I could do so much. Anyway.
Couldn't we all?
That's why I'm aligning with them because they're doing good work. And if a multi big corporations doing good work, I'm happy to be involved. So if you go to 30nightsofnookie.com, I think it's .au, then you can start to see a little bit about what's going on. So it goes live in September. That's when everyone is going to be doing their 30 nights together.
Nookie is spelled N-O-O-K-Y. 30 Nights of Nookie.
Let me just double check that so that we know. So it's 30 in numerals.
It's I-E.
Yes, so 30 in numerals, Knights of Nookie, Nookie spelt with an I-E, .com.au. Hmm.
Right.
So I'm doing that also with men's and women's health magazines because I'm their sexpert for those magazines.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this big sort of thing that we're all doing together.
Okay.
Yeah, well, so that's quite exciting as well.
It is.
So between that and my new website and the new programs and books and there's so much stuff happening at the moment. It's all very, very exciting. But enough about me.
Yes, well, enough about you and enough about the present. Let's look at the future now.
Mm.
And for the future, and when we're looking into the future, one normally should ask an expert on the future, and an expert on the future is a futurist.
Yay!
Which is exactly who our guest is.
Mm.
Ross Dawson. Hello, Ross.
Hi.
Hi. Oh. You're a futurist, aren't you?
That's the job description. Yes, that's right.
It's sort of a self-created job description, though, isn't it? You're very much a self-made person.
Absolutely. And so what I always say is when people ask me, as they often do, how do you become a futurist? The answer is you claim you are and people either believe you or they don't.
And they believe you based on the quality of the information that you give them.
Yeah, it's basically the credibility comes first in a way. So I've been working in the future space for 16 years now. And my first book, which looked into the future, was published back in 2000. And I suppose I've got a few runs on the board, as it were.
Which one was that? Because you've written a few books. What was that book?
Yeah, the first book was about the future of professional services.
Okay.
And so it was quite specific around this idea of knowledge and relationships. And so it was actually in a business context, but I mean, it still is about relationships.
Yeah.
This idea that, you know, a relationship is not about selling something or doing something for somebody. It's about doing things together that you cannot do apart. And so I suppose we're already talking about sex in a way.
Well, yeah, aren't we? Yeah. Yes.
But so it was just saying, you know, this is the trend, this is the way in which, you know, this high value relationships and business are going, and so that mm-hmm. that would got a lot of attention, and I suppose presaged some of the shifts in business. And my second book in 2002 was Living Networks, which looked at the rise of the connected networked world.
Yeah, so that actually foresaw the whole social networking revolution, didn't it?
That's right. So before any of today's social networks existed, I was saying that, you know, it is inevitable that we will all connect in networks, and that will change the nature of how we socialize, who we connect with, and you know, the very nature of our business and society.
Yeah. Yeah, fascinating.
And so in a way, that's, and if we look at the future of sex, this is one of the dimensions where this is going. We are connected. And there's many shifts which are shaping the future, but one of the most fundamental is that we are connected. So, as we discuss the future of sex, we'll see there's some other pieces to it. But in a connected world, that absolutely changes how we can relate to other people and on many different levels.
Yeah, fascinating, because that's very much about what we're about, is the connection and the science. And so I'm really excited about what we're going to talk about.
So today is there's a lot of science focus, because today is as much about the science of sexuality as anything else, because it's really difficult to talk about the future without talking about science and technology.
Well, technology at least, yeah.
Yeah, because we are a technological society.
Mm.
We use machines with which to interface with the world.
And becoming more so.
And yes, it's not, machines aren't going away. Science isn't going away. Technology isn't going away.
Mm.
And human beings seem to be sticking around as well. So since they have this unfortunate habit of reproducing themselves through sex, as well as doing a whole bunch of other things through sex, it doesn't seem to be that the future is going away either. So we might as well get to come to terms with it.
Mm.
So let's start with a concept that possibly is the first one that people think about when they think about technology, which is the internet, which leads into the concept of doing things remotely. And we're looking at something like remote sex. Tell us a little bit about remote sex, Ross.
So this is essentially where you engage sexually with someone else at a distance.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many technologies that enable this, and there's the most obvious domains are, you know, in terms of, you know, stimulation. So the teledildonics is, as it describes, a dildo at a distance.
Tele as in television, as in distance. Dildo as in well.
A dildo.
And Nix, well, as in electronics. So teledildonics, dildos at a distance.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Remotely operated.
Not necessarily.
Yes. But the whole idea is then that it is not just dildos. It can also be, I suppose, emulating, female genitals, so that we can find a way. And so I suppose in a way the starting point is that the reality is there are many people who are in long-distance relationships.
Absolutely.
And
they're spending a lot of time on Skype talking to each other or flashing their
bits
or whatever.
This is the first level of where you can sort of get some visual stimulation. And so for those existing partners, I mean, clearly this is a possibility of being more deeply engaged. And I think it's important also to say that this is also about sensuality. So there is, for example, some cuddly toys where you can get some things that you can cuddle and respond to. So you can, I suppose, get feel the sensuality of being engaged at a distance.
Right.
And you know, some other things which are more around touch. So you can, you know, just get this feeling of touch or sensations in feet. In fact, one of the interesting devices is simply one that allows you to control sensuous lights at a distance.
Yeah,
so this is just the levels of engagement where you're getting beyond just being able to talk to each other or see each other to stimulate senses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then obviously, you know, there are now a variety of different offerings on the markets in terms of remote sex and teledildonics. There is actually, this has been held back a little bit because one of the companies owns some of the basic patents in the space.
Oh, yes.
So there's actually some on the market which have come off and are no longer available. We are seeing, in fact, there's more and more which devices where you can. So again, obviously this is both for partners and more it's for those who are wanting to find people who are willing to have fun experiences over on over connected devices. And so you need to have those devices if you want to engage in that. But at that point, you can explore the world, connect with people, and stimulate each other at a distance.
What I don't get, and this is something I really, maybe you can explain this, the technology already exists, for example, in computer games where you have handheld controllers that vibrate for explosions and jiggle around, etc., etc. And there have, and for quite a long time there have existed, for example, joysticks that also vibrate and shake to give you a more real experience when you're doing a video game. So the technology already exists. It isn't doesn't seem to be that complicated to be able to create devices that will you can be in close proximity to various body parts that you can then press buttons and they will shake or rattle or roll or do stuff. Why aren't we seeing more of these devices? They couldn't be that difficult to create, surely.
Well, in fact, the first generation is iPhone as or phones as vibrators. So quite some years ago, find some things to be able to say, well, you can find a way at a distance to be able to control how fast or on and off to turn the vibration of a phone. So that's a very simple way to be able to do this. And I think it still is a question of getting enough market mass. I mean, for any product, you need to be able, you know, there's cost to be able to develop and design and distribute and so on. And there's still, I think we are getting now to a level where this doesn't seem weird. And I think that the market is not that massive yet. I think so. I think significantly so. As you say, the technologies are pretty basic. I mean, you do would like things designed to purpose. Rather than, you know, and there's no reason why I say you can't use a joystick off a games console for in innovative ways. But now there still is this point of people feeling that this is unusual or not something you want to do. But there's more and more conversation about this online, seems to be more and more accepted. I think that there's still, the market is not actually that big. There's not a massive number of people buying these devices. Yet that, I mean, one of the interesting things we'll see, will this change? Will people say, yeah, this is totally normal, I'm quite happy with it, I want to engage with my partner even if we're away for a while, and we start to see far more of these, you know, this is socially accepted.
Yeah, well, I have to say, just in my experience, over the last 10 years or so when I've been specialising in this area, people are getting more accepting of just using sex toys in general. They're not seen as... Yeah, and I guess that's the first stage of... I mean, a lot of this stuff is using technology or an item or an implement or something. So probably the first phase is that people are becoming more comfortable just with having some kind of gadget, some kind of thing that's not a living body part involved in their sexual play.
That's right. And in the same way, there's many people who said, I would, you know, why would I ever get involved, join a social network? Yet they're now all on Facebook.
And yeah, sure.
So these kinds of things, people get used to an idea, and
it's part of an evolving trend. It's part of an evolving trend, isn't it? Like anything else, like online dating and all that sort of stuff.
That's right.
Okay.
We'll let people think about that. Mm. We'll let people contemplate that and how they might relate to these technologies in future years as we go to a break.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
Sex. 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 Now that we have your attention, we'd like to invite you to Jacqueline Hillier's website for lots of free information. Subscribe to Jacqueline's Tantric Lounge blog posts and get her latest insights on human sexuality. Stay up to date on Jacqueline's workshops and retreats. Visit www.thetantriclounge.com for even more practical help from Jacqueline's wealth of experience. You can also purchase bite-sized ebooks, collected writings on subjects as varied as sensual sex, spicy sex, and spiritual sex, and more. Go to thetantriclounge.com and realize your true sexual potential.
Question: what's working and what's not working in your life? Though we resolve each year to do things differently, and we want what's great for our businesses, our relationships, our health, and more, we don't always know where to turn when life gets tough. That's where Leading Life Large with host Rob Braun comes in. Our show challenges you to reevaluate where you are and keep pushing your way to the success you desire. If you want it bad enough, we can help you turn your life around. Leading Life Large airs Mondays at 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Eastern on Voice America Empowerment.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
You are listening to The Tantric Lounge with Jacqueline Hellier. Call into the program toll-free in North America at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You may also send us an email to questions@thetantriclounge.com. Now, let's get back to The Tantric Lounge.
Hi, welcome back everyone. Well, we're having a conversation around the future of sex, and we've just been talking about some more obvious technology. So Ross Dawson, our guest today, can you tell us a little bit more about what some of the other elements of future sex might be? Like, I've got a list here that you gave us, which includes things like robot sex or body suits and haptic entertainment and direct neural interfaces and things like that.
What is haptic entertainment?
Well, let's go with that one.
Haptic entertainment.
Okay. So haptics refers to the sense of touch. So at the moment we have visual or olfactory, and so haptics is, so you know, now we have the web, which can communicate in various ways. So haptics is more about sense of touch, which obviously can be focused on particular parts of the body. But the idea of a haptic suit is something you put on where you can actually feel when and how somebody is touching you, for example. Yeah. So this is the part of the next generation where we can not just have, you know, just parts of our body who are engaged with the others, but the potential to actually feel as if we are engaged. And actually
engaging with your partner.
Mm. Yep. Yeah,
and at what distance would you be able to do that? At what distance?
Well, at any distance, as long as you are connected.
Yeah.
It's, so you could be the other side of the world, could be in the next door. Mm-hmm. It's entirely equivalent. So this is relatively early on in terms of being able to get to this kind of immersion. But there are certainly haptic suits which are available, usually focused on the upper body, and these are used for a variety of different applications, and including and of course we can. Mm. I was just going to say that more and more as Hollywood or movies start to move into immersion, as we get virtual reality and so on, we will want to experience what it's actually like to be there.
And I'm sure
we're going to have action movies which will include these haptic suits as well.
Well, I mean, I've seen them. That's why I know what you're talking about, because I've seen them on movies. But so will they get to that level of sensitivity where you'll be able to experience like a kiss or, you know, quite subtle, tender?
I'd imagine that anything that has to do with pressure is the easiest thing to achieve technologically.
Mm.
If we're looking at things more like wetness, the feeling of fluidity, that might be a little harder to achieve technologically.
But surely if you were feeling and experiencing it, then your own body would, you'd be able to feel what your own body was releasing.
Yeah, but
I suppose, like, from the guy's point of view, he wouldn't be able to actually feel the wetness of a vagina.
Well, yeah, but also I'm imagining you'd have to have a very sophisticated haptic suit in order to be able to stick your tongue out, and then your partner experiences the wetness of your tongue.
And what do you reckon, Ross? Do you reckon you could do French kissing through a body suit?
Well,
do you reckon we'd ever get to that level?
There are a couple of remote kissing devices, though I wouldn't highly recommend either one of them. I think it's very
early.
Early days.
Have you tried them, Ross?
No, I haven't.
Because I reckon the tongue.
I should.
The tongue
is one of the hardest.
Well, because I have
been
given
something like lips you could do. And again, I mean, still, this is something where you do need to push the technology. This is quite difficult. Where actually, it's very interesting where you can start to make skin which looks real. The touch is still, the feeling of it is still, we're not quite there. We are getting closer to that, but we are, this is, you know, the next 5-10 years. In terms of things such as the moistness of lips, yes, you think you can emulate that. The tongue would be, I think, extremely hard to be able to get the senses which, you know, you are controlling something which is then passed on a distance to someone else. So this is more the long distance future.
Yeah,
but certainly kiss we could do.
Stuff. Yeah, I mean, because I've tried these dildo things, right? I've been sent these dildos that are supposed to simulate oral sex, right? But really all it is it's kind of like this thing that goes round and round and round and round and round. And I've tried doing it and it's awful. Like, it's awful. It doesn't feel anything like a tongue because there's so much. It just feels like this plastic thing going blah, 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 blah,
which doesn't work. But that leads me into thinking about things like, for example, that a lot of the sex, human sexuality is in between the ears anyway. So it depends on how much imagination you put into technology that isn't quite there yet. But in the longer term future, if we're looking at things like direct neural interfaces.
Well, yes, that's what I wanted to go to next.
Yeah, well, that would be like, I would imagine, the third stage of technology. Once you get past the suits thing, you'd be able to plug in directly and experience not only, I mean, that at that point a whole world, a sort of universe would open up, wouldn't it, Ross?
Yes, and this is more speculative at this point, but there was a very interesting research project which was done earlier this year where somebody was able to, it was the first brain-to-brain communication that we've experienced.
Really?
So the way it worked was that somebody was had his finger over a device for playing a game with his eyes closed. Another person was looking at the screen, and using his thoughts, he made that person push his finger down to be able to fire the thing in the game. So he was actually able to control someone else's finger impulse from somebody else's brain.
And what were they connected by? Were they connected by some kind of...
It was wires.
Yeah.
So there's basically... there wasn't any implants, but it was using some rich brain imaging and detection device on the head, connecting to somebody's, again, external devices, not implants, to be able to get somebody to move their finger.
So with that, sorry, my mind's just kind of boggling a little bit with that. So let's say two lovers were connected with neural interfaces. And so is it that they can only experience what the other is experiencing? So it's kind of a bit like a mutual masturbation. You feel what your partner's feeling when they're self-pleasuring. Or can you actually make your partner feel something? Like, would you be able to, like, make your partner have an orgasm, for instance, by thinking about stimulating them? Or can they only experience what you're experiencing?
Well, there's nothing at this point which gives us firm evidence that we will be able to experience what other people are experiencing or how their people are experiencing. Okay. So this is really the long-term future. And what I was referring to in this case is we can actually control someone else. So we could actually conceivably move to the point where we could, if we wanted someone to grab us, then we could get them to grab us.
Oh, that doesn't sound very ethical.
I
don't think we would be able to necessarily override what somebody wants to do, but we could guide them and so on. But in terms of the next point around being able to engender feelings is that we can identify which parts of the brain are involved with orgasms and other sensual feelings. And absolutely, there is a potential where we could give to someone else the potential to stimulate us in ways that would both emulate physical stimulation or potentially transcend that. And that's clearly, if we're looking at the future of sex, one of the most interesting things is, can we go beyond what we currently consider to be an orgasm and to have that enhanced or enriched or to be, have different facets of that by direct stimulation of those pleasure centers in the brain rather than the indirect stimulation, which, we have through physical engagement.
We also need to make a distinction between controlling other people's body parts and actually feeling what they're feeling. So there's obviously, again, in the long-term future, we'd be looking at things like, can I see through your eyes? Can you see through mine? Can we commune at a deeper level that may not have anything to do with physical sensations, where we're actually experiencing each other's electrochemical realities in our own brains? We're looking at levels of physical intimacy that go even beyond what nature has equipped us for. So that's way into the into science fiction land at the moment. But the funny thing about the future is that it tends to come upon us faster than we normally think that it will. So
you know, it's just one of the interesting points there is that there are a number of people have tried to do things where you can see what your partner is seeing. And so this is it's a first step. I mean, that's relatively crude in terms compared to brain interfaces, but you know, it's not so dissimilar to having mirrors around you. But where it's something where you can actually see what your partner is seeing. So this is, you know, it's not, the technology is not that difficult to set up, but I think that's a first step. And you know, it is the unknown. So it's in terms of, I think it, there's a lot of philosophical questions on saying, can we ever experience what someone else is experiencing? I think this is really the further elements of this. But I one of the really interesting domains now is you know, where we are a lot closer, is being able to more directly, you know, stimulate and engage with, you know, stimulate our partners through their brains.
Remotely, and through their brains.
And actually, and I've got it, though, I've got one thing I do have to raise, which I think is certainly, if we're looking at the future of sex and around this topic, is the concept of a collective orgasm.
Well, yes, so that moment, came to mind as well, if we all plugged in and...
Yeah. So this is the first thing, is obviously, you know, if you can actually connect more than... you know, beyond just physical domain and direct simulation, then you can obviously bring in other people into that space. So this is related to the domain of collective consciousness. Can we, you know, if we are connect our thoughts, then you know, this is part of potential for the future of humanity. We can build a common consciousness, which is, and that's obviously a fairly important thing, which we may come to as humanity, but part of that aspect of a collective consciousness is that potentially we could collectively, not just in twos or even small groups, but with the groups of many people, to be able to achieve a pinnacle of of ecstasy.
We could have to be very careful with that, because if there are too many people plugged into the network at a time and there's a big orgasm, we might end up causing a shift in the Earth's orbit.
But I'm interested. Sorry, I have something to say.
Sure.
Yeah. That, see, one of the things that makes humans cooperate and brings out the best in us is when we feel that someone's in our in-group as opposed to our out-group.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, and so if we feel that someone's in our in-group, then we get flows of oxytocin within us, which makes us feel like, yes, I like you, you're part of my in-group. And I'm just wondering whether these kind of technologies might not actually help people feel that connection.
You're talking about the monkey sphere.
I didn't know I was talking about the monkey sphere.
You know about the monkey sphere, Ross?
You're referring to Rupert Sheldrake's...
No. I'm talking about something else. I'm talking about the monkey sphere is this idea that human beings have evolved as as an offshoot of the chimpanzee line, and chimpanzees only have a certain amount of relationships before their capacity to create an in-group goes beyond their thinking capacity. So, for example, at about 200 people is about as far as you can get before the group becomes too big and you can't.
No, what I'm talking about is, for instance, like we feel the closest bonds with our immediate family, right?
Right.
Or with our lover or so forth.
Yes.
And then we'll have various groups that we feel part of.
Yes.
Right? And things like, you know, social networking and stuff are enabling us to have bigger groups.
Yes.
And that certainly way beyond the 200. Like, I mean, even people feel very patriotic, right? Like I feel closer to Australians than, say, I do to Finnish people, for instance. And if there was a soccer match...
Not that you have anything against
Finland. No, but if there was a soccer match between Australia and Finland, I'd be going for Australia, right?
Right.
If we if aliens arrived and make themselves known, then I'll be certainly feeling more human and I will feel a closer bond to other humans as opposed to an alien species, right? Mm-hmm. And studies have shown that when you have that feeling with someone who's on your in-group, you release more oxytocin when you think of them, when you're around them and so forth. And I'm just wondering, that's just what came to mind, that if we were able to kind of tap in more clearly to people like this, whether that might get that, get lots of oxytocin flowing around the world and we'd all be feeling yummy and connected and happier. And
I'd still think that unless there was some other augmentation, there'd have to be a neural limit because there's just the way that people are currently wired up, they can't relate to more than 200 separate entities, whether you call that entity the Australian nation.
Well, I'm not talking about a direct interface with
someone. I'm just saying
who do I connect with? Who do I feel positive about?
Hey, look, what do you think, Ross? Do you think the potential there is for greater general connectivity with the human race through a collective orgasm?
Well, my view is that these are domains for experimentation. And so much of looking at the future, I mean, we can hypothesize and we can, you know, look at directions and so on. But I mean, these are things where these are unknowns and we have to try. Mm-hmm. And so of course, we're very early on in terms of the potential technologies to be able to do that. One of the interesting things, as we are essentially moving to the augmentation of humans in various ways and an augmentation of human brains. So as you say, Xavier, there are some fundamental limitations of our human brains. Yet there are other domains where we probably can extend beyond our current experience of what the brain is capable of. And we don't yet know whether we can extend those further or not. So I think Xavier referring to the Dunbar number, which is
idea. Yeah, the Dunbar number. So,
which is a certain number of people which we can, the brain is capable of relating with on a reasonable level. Yet I think there's a fair case to make that is something which is reasonably hardwired into our brain, yet maybe over time that's something where we could either train ourselves or to extend ourselves through technology or change the configuration of our brains. I mean, this is what I point to is that we are in a domain of self-creation. We have finally reached the point when we can literally create ourselves as humans. There are, of course, some constraints around that. We can't just imagine anything and make that. Yet we are in the domain of creation, and now is a time of exploration.
That's
we can
a major
envisage. Is this possible? Can we try this? That what you're suggesting, Jacqueline, and we will discover that by trying.
But that's a major trend, isn't it, Ross? This idea of extending the self. I mean, we're seeing that. I mean, in a crude way, in the popularity with body piercing and tattoos as a way of body augmentation, the future might hold all other possibilities about how we would augment our own bodies in order to experience things or to represent ourselves in new ways.
Mm. Yes. Then, as you say, there's a lot of, elements in society, as you say, various ways of changing the body, which is, I think it's railing against the limitation that we've had. Yet today, there's the ideas of extending our capabilities through wearable technology, through exoskeletons, through being able to have, brain implants to extend our memories. I mean, these are realities. Glasses are, in fact, technology that extends us. We are now getting different ways in which we are.
Smartphones, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And, some research just showed is that the reality is that our brain treats Google as an extension of our memories. So we remember less of the sorts of things that we can access through Google. Our brain evolves because it does something to assist it.
Yeah. And that's why I'm sort of getting a little bit excited here and thinking about that whole connectivity because, I like to think that we're heading towards a more positive future and that we tend to use technology in positive ways on the whole. Right? Like, there's a lot of fear around social networking and stuff. What is a big brother? Blah, blah, blah. But gradually people are going, actually, it's just a really cool way to connect. And, you don't have to have intense relationships with 200 plus people, but you can have sort of light ones and sharing things. And I think personally that gets the happy hormones flowing and that it creates more love and heart opening between people. And that's kind of what I'm talking about and why I'm sort of a little bit excited about some of these potential technologies, because I think we are evolving towards greater love and connectivity as a species and beyond.
And we'll look at more of this potential for connectivity, especially in the sort of transhuman area, after the break.
We're on Facebook along with some of the greatest minds of the world, and that includes you. Visit us on Facebook at Voice America Empowerment.
Sex. 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 Now that we have your attention, we'd like to invite you to Jacqueline Hillier's website for lots of free information. Subscribe to Jacqueline's Tantric Lounge blog posts and get her latest insights on human sexuality. Stay up to date on Jacqueline's workshops and retreats. Visit www.thetantriclounge.com for even more practical help from Jacqueline's wealth of experience. You can also purchase bite-sized ebooks, collected writings on subjects as varied as sensual sex, spicy sex, and spiritual sex, and more. Go to thetantriclounge.com and realize your true sexual potential.
We're on Facebook along with some of the greatest minds of the world, and that includes you. Visit us on Facebook at Voice America Empowerment.
You are listening to The Tantric Lounge with Jacqueline Hillier. Call into the program toll-free in North America at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You may also send us an email to questions@thetantriclounge.com. Now, let's get back to The Tantric Lounge.
And we're looking at the future of sex. And in the future of sex, we're looking at also the present of sex, because we draw upon the present to look at the future. Right now, in the present of sex, a lot of people are finding gratification with, shall we say, non-human partners. If the future of robotics and other technologies, for example, artificial intelligence, continues to increase, we might find that people are having relationships with these non-human or transhuman entities. Ross, your thoughts on this?
Absolutely. And I think this has become, just in the last year or two, something which is quite clear in people's consciousness. Robotics is very much a topic of the moment, as people realize that the things we were promised for many, many decades may be finally coming. Mm-hmm. And it's when we look at robots that we can create to be, you know, like humans and interact with them. I mean, it's perhaps not too surprising that one of the first things a lot of people think about is, can I have sex with them?
Yeah,
of course. Especially since the potential is that they could be better looking than us. better endowed, not as smelly, that they will do as they're told.
And for some people, they have no emotions.
Well, in fact, that's one of the dangers. I mean, this is looking more to the longer term rather than the short term. But one of the deep and fundamental dangers of robots for sex is that there may be a lot of people who find that they prefer a robot partner to a real life partner. Because, as you say, they will do what they're told. They will always be pleasant to you. They will, you know, deal with your mood. Yeah, your moods in the most way which will assuage you the most. There was also just a recent article and study which was looking at the implications. I mean, this is, you know, it is a, you know, a challenging question, but you know, raising the question of, should we allow people to have sex with robots that look like children?
Kibochi wari.
Yeah.
That's an icky
thought.
Yeah.
And so part of it is, yeah, and I think, you know, there's some pretty deep issues around there. And it's, but it's part of it is saying that, you know, robots can be whatever we want them to be, or we're getting closer to the time where that's the case. Yet I think that I think it's pretty fair to say that as humans, it is the challenges and relationships which shape us. You know, the sexuality is relational. Very often part of a relationship.
Mm.
And if we can forget our sexual needs, you know, met in other ways, we may not be wanting to engage with other people. And some people have, you know, hypothesized that, you know, this is the end of the human race.
Yeah.
Which may be pushing a little bit too far. But I think if we want to look at the implications of sex robots, you know, we're only just getting close to. We are not yet at the point actually where we have any decent sex robots. I think attractive sex robots, though, is not that far off. We are looking somewhat beyond that. But I mean, I think we do need to look at the implications. And these are pretty, it will be, again, unknown. Is the degree to which people will say, well, can I be bothered with a human partner who is difficult and challenging?
I'm concerned about the potential for a group of people who are conditioned to relating to human-like beings in that particular way and then transferring that conditioning to real people who have real feelings, et cetera, et cetera.
Hmm.
I can just imagine conversations in the future. Look, I'm not a robot. You can't talk to me that way. You can't relate to me that way, at least until the time when robots actually get further advanced and become sentient. And that's a whole other...
Well, then you might as well be with a human. But it's interesting because, I mean, in my own clinical practice, I see a lot of people who kind of have this sort of relationship with porn in a way. Like, they... I mean, essentially what we're talking about is having masturbatory type sex as opposed to having partnered sex. So if you're having sex, whether it's with a robot or whether it's just wanking off in front of a porn show, it's kind of a similar sort of thing. It's easier, it's less complicated, it's really immediate, you get what you want straight away. And just as I'm noticing that a lot of guys in particular, occasionally women, are finding it hard to have sex with an actual real-life person because they've been so conditioned to wank to porn, I guess it's the same kind of thing here, isn't it? Like, basically, if you're having sex with a robot, it's just a sort of more fancier form of masturbation, really.
Yes, and the thing is that, as you know, as we started off this, you know, this conversation, it's robots will be perfect relative to humans who are imperfect. And that's, so as you say, there's the potential for people to get so attuned to that, to that they change their responses to humans. So I don't think we can, you know, wish away robot sex, and I think it has its has its place.
Well, I imagine for a lot of people who are on the autistic spectrum, it might be quite nice for them. I mean, I think a lot of guys that use the real dolls at the moment are sort of, you can tell they're a bit of a way on their autistic spectrum who might have trouble relating to a human anyway. So maybe they can use robots, you know, keep them happy. It just becomes a physical release.
Given these, all of these possibilities, then, in terms of the future of sex, one of the big questions is going to be how we maintain our humanity, for want of a better way of how we maintain...
Or enhance it.
Or enhance our... but also, where's the love in all of this? Do you see what I mean? We're going to have to balance to what extent the technology enhances or to what extent the technology gets in the way of intimacy.
Mm.
Well, one of the realities here is that we will fall in love with robots. And it's interesting. So we had the movie Her recently, which, you know, showed that scenario, and, you know, there's been a lot of discussion around how realistic or the time frames in which that may happen. Yet we already have had for some time some cute furry robots which are used in treating Alzheimer's as things that people actually emotionally engage with and fall in love with. And I would argue that Hollywood animations, you know, the Pixars and so on, they are a way of engineering human emotions. We can watch pictures on a screen of drawings of people interacting or 3D animations, and we cry.
Yes, in some sense we have always lived virtual realities.
Well, stories have been part of human existence right from the beginning, and they're just stories.
Yeah, so but now we can actually use this understanding, and I think a lot of this is around Hollywood and those extended cinemas, where actually we say, what does something look like, which will evoke an emotion, which will evoke certain feelings? And we are starting to get that into building that into physical devices, how, and you know, just the reality of how a robot, for example, may, you know, flutter their eyelids or look at you sideways or so on. And also
Jessica
how you
Rabbit
speak.
Turned into a
yep,
into
yep,
a human
exactly.
into a robot. Yeah.
Exactly.
And there is a danger in that because I mean some studies have shown that men in particular can get a bit drawn into, for instance, porn and stuff because it's enhancing you know, like the smaller waist and the
super
bigger
stimulus.
Tits and the super that whole super stimulus kind of thing.
Yes.
And
yes.
if the robots were actual like 3D manifestations of that, then it's going to be a bit hard for real people to even compete with that.
Yeah, so but that is part of the physical attraction, but it is also the emotional attraction. We can,
yeah, sure.
We clearly it is clear that we have the capabilities to evoke emotions and not just physical lust, but
yeah,
also
sure.
Ways
love
to be able to get people to engage. And
yeah.
So it will come first to have robots where we can engage with sexually. And we kind of think, well, you know. You can't have a conversation with them afterwards, or even before. Yet it's actually not that far off where we will have conversations and we will start to feel emotions as a result of sharing and you know, discussions and engagements. And they will be designed to say the right things. I used to live in Japan, and there's a lot of women. Can't remember the phrase, but basically, the role of these women in these bars was get paid a lot of money to have drinks, and they would basically. They were just to nod and say yes
hostesses.
To everything the men said.
Yeah, they're hostesses.
You can make it, yeah, yeah. But
they
actually specifically are
too.
The ones who just, you know, nod and say yes and, oh, isn't that wonderful? Oh, that's, you know.
That's what a lot of
sex workers
have been. That's what sex work has been throughout the years, you know. Like you turn up and you get, depending on how much you pay, you get a better quality. You pay for a really top class escort, then she's going to act like a girlfriend. You
but
know?
But you wonder then about
all acting.
What will the impact be on the world's oldest profession?
Well, yes, if they're robots instead.
Yes, exactly. Why deal
with
that? Well,
some people have predicated that all the prostitution will be wiped out by robots. One of the categories of jobs will be wiped out by technology.
But what might be interesting is there might be actually more available for females, because one of the things that always annoys me is that there's sex workers for men, but there's very, very few for women.
But I thought that was a demand thing. I thought that fewer women wanted to pay for sex.
Oh, I think that's the topic for a whole – we should interview a male escort. That'd be interesting, wouldn't it?
Yes, let's do that in a future.
I've got lots of thoughts around that, but let's focus on the future of sex still.
Let's close with some
– I don't agree, though. I think that there is definitely a role for male sex robots, and that will overcome some stigma with women buying.
Well, I think the whole empowering of women is coming a long way with toys and gadgets and stuff. Women are starting to own their own sexuality a lot more and saying, well, hey, I can stimulate myself. I can do what I like. Which is a positive thing.
We've got only a few minutes left.
Oh
yes,
my God,
and
it's always so fascinating.
Yes, yes.
Time flies.
And I just want to touch base on some very, very quick, short answers here, Ross. How far are we away from the orgasm pill?
I'm not sure if it'd be a pill, but in terms of directly stimulating orgasms, I mean, we're looking probably 15 years plus, unfortunately.
Oh, okay. So
I'm kind of interested in that because, you know, being a fairly advanced practitioner of tantra and stuff, I can bring myself to orgasm just by thinking about it. So why do we actually need a pill?
Because because in an era of quick solutions.
Yes, most people can't be bothered learning to
meditate. Yes, why spend 5 years meditating and becoming tantrically aware where you can just go to the chemist and buy a pill or whatever it's going to be and go, oh.
Or plug into something.
Mm. Yeah. We're talking about options here.
Yes.
I know that you're being the tantra romantic that you are. You would like everybody to just sit down and meditate for a few minutes every day. But not everybody's going to.
No.
Ross, it's been great talking to you.
A real pleasure.
It's certainly opened my eyes to some things that I really didn't want to think about, frankly. But hey, That's the future.
And I'm just wondering, I'm sure quite a few of our listeners, because most of our listeners listen to the podcast or whatever, not live. So it's quite possible that you as listeners might have some questions and stuff. And I'm just wondering, Ross, would you mind if people have questions, if they write in and either we bring you back for another show or you can just give us some general answers to some things and we can pass that on to our listeners? Because I know...
Sure, so it's only pass on. What I would also do is point people... So I'm the publisher of Future of Sex, which is at futureofsex.net.
Right, so that's your website.
Yes.
Futureofsex.net.
That's right, that's my public... So, note yeah, publish a lot of... amongst other things are published. So we have, you know, cover virtual sex, remote sex, immersive entertainment, robots, augmentation, and, you know, point to the sorts of things emerging.
That link's on my website too, people. So if you just go to my radio show page, then you'll find the link to Ross's.
It's very easy to remember.
Futureofsex.net.
The futureofsex.net.
Yeah.
So,
and so we're trying to build conversations there. So by all means, join in the conversations, the comments on the website there as well. But yes, happy to respond to anything which through you as useful.
Yeah. It's been cosmic.
It's been techno cosmic.
It's been techno cosmic.
Thank you.
Thank you. And till next week or next time.
Next time, next week, join us, everyone, for yet another fascinating discussion with yet another fascinating sex geek down on the Tantric Lounge.
Thank you again for stepping inside the Tantric Lounge. Please join your host, Jacqueline Hillier, again next Thursday at 5 p.m. U.S. Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. Now, go try something you've learned this week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.